Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback writer.
Buddy, this is the Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors. This is show number 135. It is March 20th, 23, and happy spring to everybody out there. And I am your host, Tom Riddell, and co-host Terry Brown will be with us shortly. And a brief intro to today's show, we have Evelyn Puerto on, and she wrote a book called Plight of the Spark. So she'll be on about 15 minutes after the hour. Now, all about us out here, here's where you could find us out there. Find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasridell.net. That's thomasridell.net. In the blog section, and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for the Writer's Lounge, or find us easily on a Google search. Find me on Twitter at TomRiddell56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line, and we will certainly get back to you. A special note, we can now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike, and I also review books on both sites as well. Upcoming authors on The Writer's Lounge, 2 weeks from tonight on April 3rd, 2023, author Christopher Gould will be here. He wrote The George Stories. This is a story that will highlight the comical and tragic aspects of life. The George Stories explores themes of identity, regret, and the fragility of life, but it is most chiefly the story of a man laid bare. On April 17th, 2023, it is to be announced. We haven't scheduled an author in that slot yet, but we will be working on that, and as soon as we do, we will get that information to you. You can find it on the Facebook page there, over on Facebook, of course. In Writer's Topics, this is where I introduce my very busy and exciting co-host, Carrie M. Brown. And today we will bring her in, and she has a couple things to talk to us about. And let me just pull in the door handle here to the Writer's Lounge and try to get her to come in here to our imaginary studios and sit down next to me. Terry, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
And how is your first day of spring going?
I had not realized it was the first day of spring until you said happy spring to everyone. And then I thought, oh, wow, it is spring, but it doesn't really feel like spring. It was a little bit chilly today.
Yes.
You know, what I knew today is Storyteller's Day.
Yes.
Yeah, and so that's what I had focused on, and I totally forgot that it was the first day of spring. So it just kind of tells where my mind is.
it's kind of good that it's got happy storytelling with the first day of spring, because it's kind of a new start. And I know that you have been very busy in the last week, and I'm very intrigued by what you're doing with your life these days. And then last week, you are doing a writer's retreat. It's kind of a do-it-yourself. Is that correct?
That's right. So I got a grant where I was supposed to be able to go to this writer's retreat in Maryland, but because of my husband's illness, I was not going to be able to go. And so I talked with the art council that had given me the grant, and we worked out that could go closer to home. And so I have a friend who has a place at the beach, and I rented her condo from her for the same amount that I would have paid to go up to the retreat in Maryland. And I'm doing a DIY retreat where I'm choosing what I do during the day and how I do it, and trying to get the editing done with my third manuscript.
Very good. It sounds very exciting. Excuse me. And, of course, the beach there, you are on, if you didn't know this, but all of my friends know, I have friends down in Delaware, too. They know that it is my ocean. So you can have the beach,
yours.
I get to have it's my ocean. So if you're on the beach, we'll give you the beach, but leave your hands off my ocean. So anyway,
it's good to know.
Yeah. So tell us about this. What's the process, and what does it take to do a do-it-yourself writer's retreat?
You know, I think there are so many different ways to write that I don't know a do-it-yourself writer's retreat is great for everyone. Some people need a lot more structure and like going someplace where, you know, now everyone is together and you're all writing for a certain period of time and then you're all going to discuss things, et cetera. So for a DIY retreat, you have to be, I guess, a little more like me, where I like to do things without having this, like real scheduled activities. And so I've been out walking on the beach, and when I go walking, I'm thinking and breathing and relaxing, and great ideas are coming to me. And then I come in and I sit and I work and I work and I work until I'm kind of tired and don't feel like doing that anymore. And then maybe I'll go for another walk, or I've been cooking some really good dinners. I've watched a little bit of television, just kind of relaxing into the fact that I've got to get this editing done. Editing is not my favorite part of the writing process. So I think it's really been good for me to get away from home and all of those things that kind of would convince me you don't need to edit now. You have other things you could do. And I don't have them here. So, yeah, it's been really good for me.
And you mentioned editing software. I use ProWriting. Yeah,
I'm using something called AutoCrit.
Okay. And how does that work for you?
Well, I love it. It's the only one I've ever used, so I can't compare it to anything else. But what I love about it is it's a monthly subscription, but you can cancel and re-up anytime. So I only pay for the subscription during periods of time where I'm doing heavy editing. And you put your manuscript in, and then it rates it against other books of your genre. And these are well-known books and well-known authors. And so I rate my book up against other historical fiction novels, and it gives you a score from 0 to 100. But not just that, it breaks it down into categories, and then even breaks categories down into categories and helps you figure out, you know, so like it's got pacing and momentum. It has dialogue, strong writing, word choice, repetition, and readability. And then within each of those, like under repetition, it has repeated words, word frequency, phrase frequency, and it will highlight for you so that you can go through. And like I found one paragraph where I had used the same word four times. And I don't mean and the. I mean like words where I said turned, 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 and turned. And I said it four times in one paragraph. And what's interesting is while I was reading it to myself, I did not notice it. But as soon as it's highlighted, it's like, oh, my gosh, you can't have turned four times in one paragraph. And I have that tendency, like a word will get stuck in my head while I'm writing, and then I'm just throwing it around like crazy. So it's just really, it's really cool to be able to go through and let them highlight for you. Under strong writing, it will highlight weak words. So, you know, good is fine if you've used it once or twice, but it's not good if you've used it 83 times. And so it will highlight good so that you can go back and determine, is there a better word? Is there a better way to say this sentence so that I don't have to say good again?
Right. Have you ever used any kind of a program like that in your first two books?
Yeah, so I started using it when I was writing Sunflowers Beneath the Snow is when I found it. So I've used it all three times, and I really like it. What's interesting is this time, when I put Sunflowers Beneath the Snow into it the first time, it got a score of 56. And, you know, it was like, oh, that's not very good, but okay, that's, you know. When I put my new one in, it got a score of 89. So it made me feel like, okay, I'm getting a little better even in my first draft writing. I'm starting to understand the way things need to be. However, my repetition score is the worst score and has been the worst score all three times. Just have the tendency to use the same words over and 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 over. So,
yeah, and my program that I use does the same thing, but it doesn't give me a rating against other, as you say, historical fiction. I would love to be able to have that in the program.
Yeah.
But I think my program was it was the actual $400 cost to me, which was well worth it because I think that.
Well, and really,
you know,
really, it's not bad when you think about $400. This is $30 a month, so it wouldn't take, but you know, a year, and it's the same price. I just happened into this one, and now I love it so much that I feel. I don't know. It's like I hate to change. I'm not a big changer. I kind of like to, you know, I found the thing that works for me, so I just kind of keep sticking to it. But I've had a lot of people suggest, what is it, Writing Pro or Pro Writing? Or?
Yeah, that's what I've got, Pro Writing.
Yeah, Pro Writing, yeah. I've had a lot of people recommend that to me.
Yeah, it's a very good program. And when I first wrote Poppy's Prison, I did not use any sort of software to help me with my editing. So what I found out was after I plugged some of my paragraphs or my chapters into this Pro Writing, I found a lot of errors. And it really kind of woke me up and kind of scared me a little bit too. So I use it as often as I possibly can now when I'm writing.
Right.
But anyways, here we are 15 minutes after the hour, and I wanted to just kind of briefly say that next time around, I would like to talk about something that's been on my mind for a very long time now, and I think it needs to be talked about. I think you would have a good base for it. good understanding. I think you and I come from the same area, the same kind of thinking on this, but it would be the book banning and censoring that's going on. I don't want to get into all the politics involved because that would be a whole other show, but I just want to kind of touch a little bit on that and kind of move through that, because I know it is something that's concerning writers. I talked to a couple today that were really upset by what's happening, so I thought it would be a good topic for next time. But anyways,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, let's get on to the next segment, which is guest author intro and interview. And Evelyn Puerto will be with us shortly, and she wrote Flight of the Spark. I want to remind everybody out there, if you're live, that is, you know, if you're listening live, I know you're live, you're not dead, you can call us in on phone number, area code 914-219-0868. You can talk to us. We'd love to have you call. Don't be shy. And my review of Flight of the Spark: Iskra lives in a place and time where the citizens and the leaders within her country put safety above all else. But what is the cost of living in a place where even swimming is frowned upon because of the dangers involved? When Iskra is rescued from a gang of bandits by someone outside of her country, a person who her village deems as being one of a group of outlaws, she soon discovers that what her country and village has told her was based on lies. As the so-called outlaw introduces her to his family, a loving and happy family surrounded by luxuries she never knew before, she begins to take risks that open her up to new freedoms she never believed existed. She falls in love with this man, but there is a cost. Her country and her village and her own mother forbid that she involves herself with these barbarians. Iskra soon realizes that the people she once loved and respected and who she totally believed in are now her enemies. They have now made plans to destroy her. Iskra must now choose the life she wants to live, even if it becomes unbearable and deadly. It's still a risk she must take to pursue her happiness and freedom and to be the man, or to be with the man she loves. Described as a young adult epic fantasy, a first installment of a three-part series, this dystopian tale had me hooked from the beginning. The author developed characters that were compelling and interesting, and the world she created had a lot of similarities to our own, in that it highlighted how different cultures and people can often get caught up in politics and propaganda, which is frequently far from reality. Sometimes when love is injected into the equation, a separation occurs and there is no looking back or believing in the ways that you have held faith in your whole life. This is a beautiful dystopian tale that examines cultures and love and what we will do and not do in our pursuit of happiness. I love Flight of the Spark. And now it is our pleasure to welcome to the Writer's Lounge broadcast, Evelyn Puerto. And let me open up the door and invite Evelyn into our little sit-down little place here with Terry. And how are you doing, Evelyn?
I'm doing great, Tom. How are you?
Doing very good. And where are you calling us tonight from?
I'm from South Carolina.
Oh,
oh wonderful. You're right, yeah. You're right near me.
where are you?
Yeah, I'm in North Carolina. In fact, I'm right above Myrtle Beach, so I go to South Carolina on a regular basis.
Oh, well, I am in the part of South Carolina just south of Charlotte, so I end up in North Carolina quite often.
Yeah.
Very good.
Interesting.
Very good. Another neighbor for you, Terry, and another person you can get acquainted with, because you've done that a lot on our show here over the past year. So, Evelyn,
I love making new friends.
Yeah, exactly. We all do. So, Evelyn, tell us about yourself, and how did your journey of being a writer start?
Well, I guess I'll start by saying I never intended to be a writer. When I was in school and they would give us writing assignments, I hated it.
I was often found on the school bus writing my writing assignment as we went to school because I just put it off as long as I possibly could. I just couldn't stand it. Now, on the other hand, I did well. I mean, the things I actually turned in, I got good grades on. And even in high school, one of my poems won a poetry contest. And on the strength of that poem, I was offered a writing scholarship, which I turned down because I was not going to be a writer. Well, I went on and had a career in hospital administration, and then I was in Russia for many years. And while I was there, I would go down to Ukraine, to Zaporizhia, Ukraine, once a summer to meet up with people from my church back in the States, and they would do a medical clinic and a children's camp. And I was their extra interpreter and helped in the clinic and did whatever they needed. While we were there, we met this family, this very amazing family whose father had been a Baptist pastor during the persecution of the Soviet Union. And not just him, but his whole family, including his children, were persecuted for their religious beliefs. And they had some amazing inspirational stories of survival and thriving in the face of all of that. After I got back to the States, a woman cornered me and said, "You need to write a book about that family." And I said, "No, thank you. I'm not a writer." And she did not take no for an answer. And the bottom line is, I agreed to write this family's memoir, thinking, how hard can it be? Well, that was my first mistake in all of that. But as I did the writing, I fell in love with the process of figuring out how to tell the story, to come up with the right words, to create that emotional situation that these people were describing to me. And then, so I finally published the book, and then it won a Reader's Favorite Award, and I thought, well, maybe I can actually do this. And suddenly there I was, thinking about becoming a writer.
Nice. And you know what? You and Terry have a lot more in common, except for being geographically close to each other. Are you familiar with Terry's book?
No, I am not.
Sunflowers Beneath the Snow. Yeah, it has to do with three Ukrainian women, and it starts in Soviet Ukraine.
Oh, my goodness. I am going to have to look that up.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, when you said Ukraine, it was like, oh, my gosh, I wish I had had you around so I could have picked your brain as I was writing.
Right.
Yes, and Terry has won a lot of awards for that book, and she's already on her third book. So, Evelyn, you've made another friend here today. So let's start off with another question. And when writers start out, we usually focus in on a favorite genre that we like, or sometimes I think we just start writing a story that we wanted to get out of our heads and on the paper, which happens a lot, I think, with Terry and myself. But regardless of what genre that it might fall into, your story fits well into young adult category. How did that happen for you? How did you decide to go into that genre?
Well, when I decided to try fiction, I first was thinking of science fiction. And as I was plotting out the story, somehow it morphed into fantasy, and I was having a really hard time figuring out, well, which subgenre is this? And kind of by default, I decided, well, it really fits young adult because of the age of the protagonist and just the general tone of the story. So I settled on young adult epic fantasy, and it's done okay with that.
So it was
good.
A happy accident.
It kind of was.
I love happy accidents. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of the same with me with Sunflowers. I had a story to tell, and then I said, okay, well, what genre does it belong in? I didn't even really know. So, yeah.
Right.
Terry?
Yes, so, you know, we live in this world. We've got different cultures, different politics, different religious beliefs, different a lot of things. So how much does your main character have in common with how we live in our world? And then, like, how safe do you think it is for us to explore other countries and people?
Wow, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
my main character, the big theme within her culture was they had traded their freedom for their safety. There had
right.
been a traumatic civil war that they were all escaping from, and they resettled this land, and they decided they were never going to have that again. So in exchange for giving up all of their freedoms, they were going to be safe. And it got to some absurd lengths. Tom mentioned it in his review that even swimming was forbidden because you could potentially drown if you were swimming. But that's silly because if you can't swim and you fall in the river, well, now you're really in trouble. That could be a problem. And the idea, and they were trying to legislate freedom, or legislate safety, and just by outlawing everything. And Iskra, the main character, realizes, you know, you could get struck by lightning, something could happen that you just can't control everything. And the Riskers, the outlaw group, they had a whole different approach to life of you have to take some risks or you just don't have a life. And yes, you can be prudent, but you can't live in fear of everything. And what you're afraid of rules you. And that's what she learned to break away from.
And I also would kind of relate that to, you know, a lot of our lives. I grew up being very overly protected in my life, and I had very loving grandparents too that brought me up. But I always wanted to do things that they said, you can't do that, you're going to get hurt, or you can't do this or you can't do that. As it was related to in your story, she couldn't swim. Well, then she got the ability or had the offer to her to go swimming, and she ended up doing it, and it was very exhilarating for Iskra to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, she developed a love relationship in the process of that. So that's what I found it was really interesting about your story, because it brought a lot of real life to the story, and we can all relate. And I think that in any genre that we write in, even if it's in another world, there is some relationship to our lives. A lot of people kind of turn away from young adult. When I saw that, the first thought, to be honest with you, I thought, well, maybe I should pass on this. But I think a lot of times, I think that the older we get, we can appreciate a story like yours much more. It kind of goes along with, not exactly, but with the Harry Potter series. You know, who wants to read about a boy wizard? That's for, you know, 6, 7, 8-year-old kids. But as we know now, those books and that series of books and movies have generated a lot of interest from people from 6 to 106. So
right.
Sometimes I think we get caught up in a genre that might kind of immediately kind of keep people out when really they should give it a shot. And I'm really glad I did with your book.
Yeah, a lot of
well,
times
I am
to me with young adult fiction, I often think that I love young adult fiction because they tackle things that a lot of times these other genres are afraid to touch. Can do it in a way because they put it in a fantasy world, and it's almost like the stories that used to be told around the fire that were, you know, about other lands and other peoples, and then you found out later that there was a moral to the story that had to do with what you were living. And that's the way I find young adult fiction to often be.
Yes,
yeah,
it often comes up that way.
Yeah.
Yes, it sure does. And the characters that you wrote were very compelling, as I had written in my review. What was that process like in creating them? I know that with Terry and I, they kind of come into our heads and start talking to us. Did you have that happen in your story? How does that work out?
Wow, I have to think back because this was my first novel. I had plotted out the story, and I knew kind of how Iskra's arc would go. But the rest of them, they changed and developed. And it took me 6 years to write this book because really I didn't have any idea how to write fiction when I got started. So there was a lot of time spent going back and reading books on writing and rewriting and rethinking things. But one of the antagonists, Kiberko, who's kind of the mayor slash police chief of the town, he changed and grew so much. He changed from almost a flat villain to somebody that Iskra had really looked up to and had taken a great interest in her. And then, well, things went downhill after she became more rebellious. So, yeah, a lot of those characters, they just grew up as I was writing, and they kind of took their own turns that I didn't really plan.
Yeah, isn't it really strange sometimes when you sit down to write and all of a sudden a character takes you in a different direction and you're kind of trying to pull back on it and it keeps on wanting to go. No, you're going this way. Well, that's going to mean another, 50, 60,000 words, and you're trying to restrain the word count and everything. So I find it amazing and very frustrating when it happens, but it's really kind of magical when it happens too.
Yeah, they start saying things I had no idea they were going to say. Like, okay, I guess we'll go with that and see where that takes us.
And as we mentioned in the beginning of the show, do you use any kind of software for your writing?
Yes, I do. I write in Scrivener, which really helps me keep organized, and especially in trying to balance out all of the world building and have all of my notes in one place. I still have a bunch of Post-it notes floating around, but I'm getting better at getting all that in the Scrivener document. And I was really fascinated by your conversation about this. I do use Pro Writing Aid. And
yes.
what I've been doing is I do send my work to a professional editor. And then after I get it back and I make all of the changes she thinks I should make, then I put it in Pro Writing Aid, because I have found with all of the editors I've used, they're not so good. They're really good at picking up the plot holes and helping me refine the story and doing a lot with the grammar and punctuation. But those echo words, the repeated phrases, those get missed a lot.
Yeah.
And some of the other things. So I did this on my last book. After I did the editing done, I put it through Pro Writing Aid, and I was amazed at how much I ended up tweaking through that process. But I think that was the way to go, that software just finds the things that get missed by human eyes.
I think they get missed because we get involved in the story, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want your editor to actually enjoy your story enough that they get involved. But once a person switches out and all of a sudden they've become a reader, then they're going to start missing things, you know, and you don't notice the fact. Like, honestly, today I had one paragraph that had five sentences and I used the verb turned four times in one paragraph. And I've edited several times and never saw it.
Wow.
And I didn't see it because in my mind, I was reading the story and the flow was right. Everybody was doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about putting it through that software that it makes you stop focusing on the story and actually focus on the words that you're using. And that's just the harder thing to do, I think, alone.
Oh, I agree. I agree entirely. And even now when I go back to Flight of the Spark, every time I pick it up, I see something that I want to edit. And
okay.
I think, no, this went
that
through
never,
two
that
editors.
Yeah.
Right. Two editors and a proofreader. We are done. This is as good as it's going to be.
Yeah, you know, and it's crazy. I did the same thing. I got An Enemy Like Me back. I was so excited. So that was my second book going out. I pop it open and I start reading it. And immediately I had that kind of dread feeling because it was like, oh, what did I say that for in that way? I mean, it's just, I don't know, there's something about having it in a book format sitting in your hand where all of a sudden you notice a word and you think that whole word's going to just ruin the book.
Right.
Yeah. Evelyn, when you shop around for editors, what's that process like? It's kind of, is it difficult for you to to trust in an agent or editor or publisher?
Well, I'm self-published, so I have to trust in myself for the publishing part. But for the editing,
right.
You know, it's been a while since I've done it because I found this woman probably about 2 years ago, and I'm sticking with her. I looked, let's see, I did some Google searches, and I relied on websites that would kind of rate or give some kind of credential, I guess, to the editors. I wasn't just going to Google somebody and pick them off their website. But I think it was the Alliance of Independent Authors, if I'm not mistaken, or something like that I found. Yeah, they have that whole section of resources that you can look at. And I think I found my editor through them. And I've been very happy. I've been very happy with her.
Very good. Terry?
Yes, so, you know, there are so many different ways to define what it means to be a successful author. So what is your definition of being a successful author? And do you feel like you've reached that definition yet? And then do you have other goals that you haven't reached yet?
I think I have met some of the goals, but certainly not all of them. In terms of the quality of the writing, I think I'm getting to where I want to be. I really can see how I have grown as a writer and improved the craft over time, and especially how my process is becoming more streamlined. It doesn't take me so long to write a book as it did before because I now understand how to put the story together and just how to make the story flow and how to develop the characters. So that is going well, in my opinion. I set goals for myself to be able to produce a book every 10 to 12 months, and I'm able to do that. And I feel like I'm having some success. I'm getting some traction because I'm of the feedback I get from my early readers, from reviewers, from the people on my newsletter list. I just feel like that's just starting to build, and it's, as you all know, it's a long, slow grow sometimes. But I feel like I'm getting traction with that. And in terms of sales, I feel like I'm just getting to the point where that's getting to be a point where I feel like I'm getting somewhere. So, nope, I haven't achieved everything, but I do feel like I have had some success in getting where I want to be.
Uh-huh. Very good.
Awesome.
And Evelyn, who are some of your favorite authors and why?
Oh, wow. Well, I'd have to start with Tolkien and C.S. Lewis because I read Narnia and Lord of the Rings over and over and over as a kid. I really enjoy Brandon Sanderson's fantasy. I just found somebody, and I don't think she's as well known. I think her name is Althea Sharp. I just read one of her books and was really blown away by it. There's an obscure little book called Ali and Nino by Kurgan Said, which I think is one of my all-time favorites, and it's one of the books that really showed me how to write a different culture to make it come alive. Wow, is that enough? Oh. And
yeah.
I'm always partial to Tolstoy. I really like Anna Karenina, and I'm probably one of the few people in the world that really loved every minute of reading War and Peace.
Very good.
I think
very
you may
good.
Be. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone say that before. Most people say, oh, it's like reading War and Peace, and they say it, you know, with that kind of tone.
Yeah. Where do you like to go to write? And on average, how long do you write in the course of an average day?
Well, I have a little office off my kitchen, which is sometimes convenient for when I want to stop and make lunch or whatever, but sometimes dangerous because if I'm procrastinating, it's far too easy to take three steps to the refrigerator and start grazing on something. I try to protect my mornings for actual writing, so I like to have a good three-hour session in the morning, and then depending on what else I have going on in my life, to be able to do some more in the afternoons. sometimes it's more marketing kinds of activities in the afternoons. Right now I'm drafting a new novel, so I'm really trying to get between 4,000 and 5,000 words done a day. So I do 2 or 3 sessions a day now with the writing. An average day is about 3 hours of writing, 2 or 3 hours of life stuff, and then a couple hours of marketing.
Good. And it kind of goes along with you, Terry, isn't it? Isn't that what you sort of do? Do you get your best writing done in the morning?
You know, I don't know when I get my best writing done. I get my best writing done when the mood hits me. And I wish I were more like Evelyn, that she sits down every day and writes. I've tried it, and it doesn't work for me. I sit down, and then I just stare. Or what I write really doesn't, it doesn't sound good. It's no good because I feel like, I don't know, it's like I'm being forced to do something I don't want to do. On the other hand, I come on a writing retreat, and I can sit and write for 14 hours and not get up off the chair. And
wow.
I don't have any problem doing that. So I think that there's something about someone telling me what to do. I'm a little bit rebellious that way. I don't like people telling me what to do.
Yeah.
Oh, I can relate.
And Evelyn, I've looked at reviews of your book, and you're doing very good in a number of reviews that you're getting here in your series. I have to remember that I don't think she mentioned it, but this is part one of a 3-part series. Is that correct?
There's actually 4. The fourth one just came out last November.
Wow, very good. Yeah, how do you deal with the good and bad reviews, and what is your approach to getting readers to review your work?
Getting readers to review my work, that is the hardest thing. For Flight of the Spark, I contacted gobs of bloggers. I don't even remember how many. And probably about 15 of them agreed to read my book, which I was grateful for because I was a new novelist and they didn't know who I was. And since then, I've been just trying every avenue I can think of to try to attract more reviewers. One of the things I did when the fourth book of my series came out was I made the first book free permanently and done a couple promotions, and that has helped a lot. I generated probably 15 reviews in the first month of that, and I've also gotten a lot of good read-through. So people are obviously reading that free one and then reading on in the series. So that's very encouraging.
There is something wonderful about having more books. You know, when you have the first one, there's all of these marketing ploys that people tell you about, and you can't do it because you have one book.
Right.
You can't do what they're suggesting. But you get a little more work out there, and it's like, oh, now I can start taking advantage of the fact that I do have more than one book available.
Right, and that's why I feel like I'm finally getting some traction. It just took a while to get, you know, 3 of the 4 books out there, so I could, as you say, start making use of this. Dealing with bad reviews, you know, that's an interesting question, and it's really an interesting thing. Because sometimes the reviews are so contradictory. I had one reviewer say, oh, this is so fresh and unique and original. And then the next one said, there is nothing original here. So it's hard to know what to make of that. Who do you believe?
I've had the exact same thing. I had literally, and not only did they say that, but they picked the same paragraph out of a particular chapter, and one of them talked about how it was a paragraph that just made them think and they couldn't imagine and the next person used the very same paragraph to show how it was just like every other book out there. And I thought, how can that be? That's like saying, I don't know, it's like saying, look, you're a really fat, thin person. I don't
right.
It's like, what do you do with that?
I mean, I deal with it by saying, okay, first of all, this is an art form, so that's their opinion. And a lot of times, especially with my early readers, when they're critiquing the work that's in process, say maybe 3 or 4 of them are very enthusiastic, and then somebody has some negative feedback. after I've gotten over the urge to want to throw things when I read that, then I come back to it. And sometimes it takes a few days, but when I'm calm, I come back to it. And I really try to look at that negative feedback and figure out, okay, is there something really valid in this? And sometimes they're wrong and okay, but sometimes there's some valid point and I can either tweak something or change something. And sometimes it's not what they were critiquing, but I see something else that could be changed that would deal with their issue, whatever it was. So I really try to just look for what's true. And if I don't agree with it, then I don't agree with it because that's their opinion and these are my imaginary people and they're going to do what I want them to do anyway.
Yeah.
So that leads me to my next question, Evelyn. Is there a lot of you in Iskra?
There is in some ways, yes. The part where she goes swimming and jumps off the rock, that was based on an actual event where I went with some friends to somewhere where there was this big rock and I knew I could swim. I knew I wanted to do it. I jumped off diving boards, but somehow that terrified me. And this other girl and I just held hands and ran and jumped off the rock. And then it was like, oh, yeah, we're going to do this again. So I've got to capture that for her because, and especially for Iskra, who had never done anything like that, it was probably 10 times more of an exciting feeling than what I went through. But, yeah, there was some of that, and there was some of that real desire to conform, but also refusal to not ignore the truth. And, you know, that she just, once she understood the truth, she could not live a lie anymore.
Yeah, she couldn't put the genie back in the bottle.
Exactly. Yeah. She had a kind of a bruising relationship with her parents, especially her mother. And I found that interesting, too. Because a lot of young people today, you know, going to your readers will relate to a lot of that also. So I found that interesting that you took that line.
I do have to say, when my mother read the book, she said, I hope you didn't model that mother after me. And I said, oh, no, that was not you. I promise, Mom.
There's a little bit of fear of letting people read your book if you think they might see themselves in it.
Right.
Yes. And how did your mother like the book?
She did like it. She is not a fantasy fan at all. So I have to be grateful that she even read it. And she did enjoy the book. She did enjoy the story. So that was good. But yeah, it was a non-fantasy fan reading it. So,
Go ahead.
Oh, my husband, who doesn't like fantasy at all, he will read my books. And he says he's actually interested in them. So I consider that high praise.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how that works where you think you're not interested, like I was talking about earlier? Mm-hmm. I'm not into vampire stories because I think it's overdone and it's the market is overcrowded. But I have a friend of mine that writes really good character development and her characters are awesome. So every time I pick up one of her books, I'm reading a vampire story, but I'm not thinking of it in that way. I'm thinking of it more in the terms of good characters and a good storyline. And I think that's important to a lot of people that are out there that would once again dismiss a genre just because I'm not into it. Well, how do you know if you don't try it? Because usually it takes a couple of paragraphs or even a couple of chapters before the story really hits a nerve and you just can't stop reading. You just can't stop reading. And that's when I review books, that's what I kind of go on at first. With your book, immediately took off. I couldn't stop, couldn't put it down. I just kept on reading.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, Terry?
So you said that you were currently drafting a new book. So tell us a little bit more about what's next for you.
Well, the the first series I did was 4 books, and I concluded that series, and I started another one.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Then the next book is actually, I have finished the second draft, and I've booked my editor for May, so I have to hurry up and get the third draft done in the next 6 weeks or so. But that one is a whole different world with a whole different system of magic, and it's a little bit of a twist on Sleeping Beauty. I have a princess who has to go wake up the cursed prince. But when she does, she ends up creating more problems than she solved. I'll just leave it at that. And that's going to be the first of a series of 4. And I am now drafting the sequel to that one, which continues on the story of what happened later. So, yeah, it's been fun. It's been really fun and really fun to imagine. So this prince, he's been in this cursed sleep for 100 years. Everybody he knows is dead. Now what's he going to do when he wakes up? And, yeah, it's that's been fun to explore.
Yeah. How far along?
Is it YA as well?
I am not going to bill it as YA this time and see what happens. Because precisely for what Tom was saying, because a lot of people say, I don't read YA. And there's, in my reading of YA, there's a lot that is, I would say, very much catering to a high school age audience. And then there's a lot of other YA. It's YA because that's how old the protagonist, but the themes of the book resonate with any age. So I'm just going to build this as epic fantasy and see what happens. I might change my mind based on what my editor thinks, but that's where I'm thinking right now.
Well,
the truth is as a self-published author, if you put it in as epic fantasy and you just find that isn't the best way for it to be, you can change your mind. You know, there isn't anyone who said no, you signed a contract for YA or for epic fantasy. Like you can say this isn't working and I'm going to change how I'm marketing my books. So
And the only reason I haven't changed Flight of the Spark and the other ones is that Flight of the Spark and the third one in the series Sting of Scorpion both won awards in the young adult category. So I don't want to change the category, but yeah, it's, as you say, it's not always cast in stone, and it's worth experimenting with.
I think there's a lot of fluctuation in genre, too. And, you know, people will say, well, what's the genre of that book? And it's like, well, I'm saying that it's historical fiction. However, it also has, you know, like Sunflowers Beneath the Snow, believe it or not, anything earlier than 1970s is considered historical fiction. So my book starts out as historical fiction, and yet it goes all the way through to modern times, so it really is a cross time, so it isn't true historical fiction. And that's been a little difficult with that book because some people are very, very particular, like if you're trying to get it into an award category or something. Some people are very particular and will say, no, that's not historical fiction. We're going to put it more in a general genre fiction. And it's like, okay, except, you know, and so it's crazy. Yeah. I think that trying to stick a book, some books obviously fit very well into a category. If you're writing a cozy mystery, you know you're writing a cozy mystery, and people reading it know that it's a cozy mystery. But there are some, I think, that, I don't know, it's like, well, is it an epic fantasy, or is it more of a historical fantasy, or is it more of a, you know, there's so many different fantasy genres that it's almost hard to pick where you want to put it.
Oh, that's for sure. There's sword and sorcery, and then there's magical realism, and then there's coming of age fantasy and fantasy romance, and you could go on and on. And
I know, and it's,
make yourself
and
crazy.
And it's almost, it's almost like, oh my gosh, where do I fit? Where do I fit? And that's the hardest part for me. Well, it's hard for me, too, because it's back down to that idea of being told to write every day. I also don't want to be put in a box and have someone tell me, well, this is what you write. Well, what if I don't want to write that next time? What if I have something else in mind, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I think the whole picking the genre thing was one of the hardest parts because I wrote the book and then I had to figure out where it belonged.
I've been there. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, I think we get pigeonholed into a genre sometimes. I don't think it's a good idea for writers to limit themselves and to, you know, put themselves in there. But unfortunately, the way the publishing world is, you kind of get stuck into categorizing your book, which I don't know. I sometimes think it should be either fiction or nonfiction and let the reader decide where it falls. You know, that's probably the best way to do it sometimes.
Well, yeah, you know, read the back of the cover and decide for yourself if it's something that sounds interesting to you instead of, you know, genre. But then I can understand why you want genres, because it helps people who are looking for something specific know where to go. I don't know. It's just, I just find it difficult. I think I find it difficult because for writing, as a reader, I knew about very broad categories. I did not recognize how many subgenres there were. And so, you know, you're sitting there with, you know, historical fiction, and then you see the list. And it's like, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. Where am I supposed to put
That's
it?
Right. There was science fiction, fantasy, romance, Western, crime. I mean, that was about it.
Right. That was about it. And so in my mind, it was like, okay, well, I'm writing history, and that's good. And then it's like, oh, but is it this kind or that kind or this kind or this kind, or maybe it's this kind? Or did you know that there was this category you'd never heard of before, and it could fit there, and it could fit in both places, but maybe it only fits, and it's like, oh, yeah, it's a little overwhelming at times.
Wow.
It certainly is.
Evelyn, we're getting close to the end here. We got a little over 3 minutes left, and as we say on the Writer's Lounge, this is sort of your Oscar moment. Any parting words of advice? Or anyone you would like to thank for the successes you've had as a writer and with your life?
Well, I would have to definitely thank my husband, because he has enabled me to spend so much time with the writing, and he is my biggest fan, and he does listen to me talk about my imaginary people, and he has given me some good advice at times about how to resolve a certain story element. So he is definitely top of the list. Advice for somebody, I would say, don't go it alone. There are so many groups on Facebook. There are so many resources, so many writing platforms. Get involved with at least one community and get some feedback of your work and use that community's knowledge to help you make decisions about your writing career, whether you want to go traditional, you want to self-published, or what genre you want to land in, or how to figure out what genre you're writing, or any of the jillions of questions out there.
Right.
Just don't try to go it alone.
Very good. And where can they contact you if they want to pick up your books?
My website is evelynpuerto.com. And my books are on Amazon, Google Play, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Apple Books. So they're all there. They're listed on my website. And if they want to be part of get my newsletter where I give writing updates and give tips on books I've been reading and free books, it's subscribe.evelynpuerto.com.
Very good, Evelyn. And thank you so much for being on the Writer's Lounge. We really appreciated it.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciated being on, and it was a great pleasure to talk to both of you. And I'm
going
to look
for
your book, Terry.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. Goodbye, Evelyn. Good night.
Bye-bye.
And there we go, Terry. And what'd you think? That was pretty pretty good there. You've gained another friend, it looks like.
I hope so. Yeah, I was asked. I was a podcast guest, or we – recorded a podcast yesterday, and I was asked about something, and that's when I said, oh yeah, on podcasts I have so much fun when I'm doing the co-host, because I've made so many friends.
Yes.
And I really have a number of people that I've just said, wow, we really connected. I want to stay up with them. So
consider it a matchmaking program for Terry Brown. Yeah. That was my plan. That was my whole plan in the whole beginning of it.
Was it from the very beginning? You knew that. Huh?
Yes, yes. We want to make you friends. So anyway, it's always good to have you here, my friend. And next time around on April 3rd, Christopher Gould will be here with the George story. So tune in for that. And until then, we will see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and the eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well. Good night and happy springtime.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. Of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make